For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
My pappy said, son, you're going to drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving that hot rod Lincoln.
The ups and downs at Talladega, from Ryan Blaney to Kevin Harvick to Devin's View from the stands, and we look at the playoff standings for all three series as we get ready to go to the Charlotte Roval with that Christopher Bell helps us preview. We also talk about fight ethics after a nasty tussle in the Truck Series garage. This is 5 to Go.
They arrested me and they put me in jail and they called my pappy to throw my bail. And he said, son, you're going to drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving that
hot rod Lincoln. All right, climb in the window, get in the driver's seat, put that helmet on and pull those belts tight, because this is the 5 to Go Racing Podcast here on WSBRadio.com and GoPRN.com. I'm Doug Fireball Turnbull from the traffic team here at 95.5 WSB and part of the announcing team, when I can be anyway, at PRN, Performance Racing Network, and they will be busy this upcoming weekend at the Charlotte Roval. That is going to be a big, big race there. The Bank of America 400 kilometers, that is, won last year by Christopher Bell. Last year's winner, later on in the show, will help us preview that. Devin did some work at Bristol there to get Christopher to talk to us about that. And let's mention him, by the way. Joining us on the line here is our super roving journo. He was in the stands at Talladega. He'll be part of the media collection at Charlotte Motor Speedway there for that Roval race. It is Devin Kupka from University of North Georgia, locked up in one of the classrooms. I see, Dev. How you doing?
I am doing good. It was a fun Sunday at Talladega Super Speedway this weekend and had a good time in the grandstands, being able to just kind of relax a little bit compared to when you're on the media side of things. But overall, it was a great day, a little bit more simpler, getting to check out the fan zone for really like the second or third time this season. And it was a good time all around, and it was a good race.
I love to hear that. We'll hear a little bit more about it, too, because you're going to talk about kind of the tenor of the race and the eye test versus what actually was happening. All right, another guy that's revving up the tachometer here in episode 237, our master maker of speed, just been cutting the grass outside his big old Dano garage there. The master maker of speed, like I said, Dr. Dano Elliott, how you doing?
Doing good. Just trying to exhale some of this ragweed and everything else that is in the air right now, and hope everybody's doing well. It does have sinus issues, because I know I do, and this is the wrong time of the year.
But you cleared that frog out of your throat, and you sound great, my brother, there. Not the first time Dan Elliott's been exhaling weed on a Tuesday morning in Dawson County. Oh, no, I'm sorry. No, that's just a joke. Hey, look, we got to talk about that. There were shenanigans going on. I'm sure the Devin was a front seat to there in the grandstands. Not only did the crowd get revved up with Ricky Bobby and Cal Naughton Jr., a.k.a., Ryan Preece and Chase Briscoe with the Shake and Bake paint schemes, Wonder Bread and Old Spice. But, Dev, you were out in the fan zone. I know you've seen a lot of, I'm sure, interesting stuff out there. So just kind of give us the nutshell of Talladega. And I want to know at the end of it, were fans excited about what they saw with that field staying, for the most part, 2 and 3 wide?
Well, Talladega is Talladega whenever you go there, especially on the fan side. I really can't say any of the experiences are really different, except maybe between the spring and fall race, where you have more people in the spring than you do in the fall, but pretty equal crowds overall. And the fan zone, it was fine getting to check to see what that's all about. Because normally on the media side, I don't really go to the fan zone anymore, because I just don't have time to go out there. So it's nice to see what the fans are seeing out there in the fan zone. There's a lot of things to do. There's this really cool Busch Light thing that they have out there, where they had it at North Wilkesboro, but they had it near the concert stage, but where it's like two decks. Bottom below is like a bar area, and you can get Busch Light or whatnot. And then the upper deck is like a rooftop. It's pretty cool to go up there. And I went up there just to see what the view was like. So that was pretty cool. And there were a lot of long lines on the merchandise haulers. So that's a very good sign. But to get to the race, I thought we all thought the race was good. The crowd was pretty electric towards the end, especially I would say that the most electric they got was when Elliott got out to the lead. And one thing I noticed too, walking around the grandstands, you're going to say Chase Elliott's the most popular driver. And this is one thing I've noticed not only when I was just at Bristol, but like here. And maybe it's because he's not in the playoffs, but it just doesn't feel like, I don't know why, but I saw the people that were next to me, Truex fans, people like kind of diagonal from me, Stenhouse fans. There might have been a Harvick fan, but I didn't see any Elliott fans directly in front of me.
I don't know,
maybe it's because he really isn't in the playoffs. Not to say that I didn't see any Elliott gear there, but the feeling there is just a little weird about that. But anytime he was out there charging for the lead, there was a lot of cheers going on. But those cheers also carried over to the end of the race, which was a very, very exciting finish. And to be honest, it would have been cool to see Kevin Harvick possibly win his final race in the NASCAR Cup Series. Very similarly, well, at the time we didn't know it, but Dale Earnhardt won his final Cup race at Talladega back in 2000. So that would have been really neat to see, but cool to see Ryan Blaney win for a second time this season. I think I've been to seen him win four times, I think, in person, and I think I've been to three out of the last five points paying races that he's won. So maybe I'm a good luck charm for him.
I guess so. Yeah. So Ryan Blaney has won three of the last five points races you've been to. Is that what you said?
No, three out of the five. No, I've been to three out of the five last points races that he's won.
I see. So you've been to the. Atlanta, I got you.
Yeah.
So yeah, Atlanta, the Coke 600, and then this Talladega race. It's interesting now. It kind of snuck up on us. Ryan Blaney actually does have nine career wins, and we just never felt like he's busted out. This is actually only his second multi-win season of his career. 2021, he popped off three race wins. Last season, he was winless and just won the All-Star race. And then this year, of course, he takes Talladega and also won the Coke 600, and you were at both of those races, Devin. Oh, and by the way, Ryan Blaney won the inaugural Roval race in 2018 when Truex and Johnson. Johnson, by the way, you mentioned last wins, was going for what would have been his last career win, right? Because he didn't win after that time, and they wrecked each other out coming to the start-finish line, and that was probably the closest that Johnson ever got to winning again. And who would have thought Dan Elliott in 2018 and the Roval, when he still had two full seasons left in his career after that, Dan, that Jimmy Johnson, when we saw him wreck coming to the checkered flag at the Roval, that'd be the last time we'd see him get that close to winning.
You know, it's amazing to me thinking about how it's not just racing, but kind of sometimes how life works, and not to ponder on that. But it's just one of those things that, yeah, I'm as surprised as you are. And I think that there's been several other surprises about the year too as well. And it just never ceases to amaze me when I think I've seen everything, something new crops up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think here's why you have to actually run the races, because if you come into this season thinking that Chase Elliott would still be winless, okay, and then now he has a one-year winless streak going back to Talladega last fall, that he wouldn't have made the playoffs, which Devin's already talked about, that you'd have, gosh, you know, three or four of the different drivers that won races last year not only are winless but having miserable seasons. Eric Jones, Austin Cindry, Chase Briscoe, right? That just, you know, it's just like you've got to actually run the races. Who would have thought that Stuart Haas would be still this far off the reservation, that Team Penske, despite their win at Talladega, would be this far off the reservation, and that Roush Fenway Keselowski Racing, RFK, would be running this well. And they ran well at Talladega, though the drivers each had problems that were not up the front. Brad Keselowski was pushing Carson Hocevar and caused one of the bigger wrecks of the day there. Of course, the biggest wreck, Devin, was coming to the checkered flag. What was the crowd like? So did the crowd seem like they enjoyed the race? And what did they think of the finish there with Blaney winning by 12 one-thousandths of a second over Harvick and then all the melee behind them?
I just think the end of the race, the crowd, I would say, was pretty pumped up the final two laps because everybody wanted to see Harvick win the race. Not that people didn't want to see Blaney win the race. There were Blaney fans in front of me. But the crowd was pretty electric because of how close that finish was. So they got pretty electric towards the end. And I don't know if it was really the crash, the last lap crash, but the one before that where, I guess you could say the big one before the last crash, that one was pretty surreal because that was where Brad Keselowski almost got airborne. And one thing I thought that was really interesting was just kind of seeing it in person. And I've been to a few races now where cars have flipped. 2021, where Joey Logano flipped at the Geico 500.
Yeah.
Now, I was on the lower level, kind of similar where I was the other day at Talladega, where you could see a little blip. You could see the car way off in the distance.
Wow.
I was at the Coke 600 last year. Now I was
Buescher.
Not too far from it, but like same time where it's kind of out of the eyesight a little bit. You have to turn. This one was pretty surreal to see kind of happen in real time. Brad Keselowski almost flipping at Talladega just to see how fast everything was going, where his car, I was looking at it as when the wreck was happening, I was looking at Keselowski's car, and then boom, it just starts to take air, and it's just incredible. I don't know, Doug, if you've ever seen that in person, but just TV doesn't demonstrate it necessarily fully, but just how fast it's moving in the, like how fast that car, it's not staying still in the air. It's moving at 150 miles per hour, going right past you, almost ready to turn over in the air.
Yeah.
But luckily it got back on the ground. That was very, very surreal to see that. Brad Keselowski nearly flipping directly in front of me.
The one that I saw that was scariest was the 2020 Daytona 500 finish. And I guess I was looking at the screen more than at the start finish. I think I went screen and then pivoted the start finish line, saw a big ball of fire, and then immediately turned up to the screen. And I actually took pictures as it was happening and have them on my phone of Ryan Newman. And of course, that's a wreck where Ryan Newman had to spend the hospital, and we thought that night that he might be in serious trouble, and it turned out he was out of the hospital a day or two later.
And another thing, too, as well, the Austin Dillon hit in the wall there. They had to put the red flag out to fix the safer barrier.
Yeah.
I saw just the impact on it, and that was just I think that's probably one of the hardest hits I've seen in person.
Ty Gibbs also hit the inside wall very hard, too. And, I mean, you know, again, hard hitting at Talladega is kind of part of it. That's, you expect it. But, my goodness, they hit hard on Sunday when they did hit. I am glad, Dan, that race didn't turn into just a total crap show. There was the big spread of cars at the finish of the race, Dan, but it seemed to me that they were mostly behaving out there and just trying to bide their time. And I guess the problem was that there wasn't a lot of forward momentum, Dan, to try to go up toward the finish. You know, they were kind of all just packed together.
You know, that's probably one thing. But another thing, too, is, Doug, this stuff does scare you to death as far as the impacts that these drivers have. And being injured this close to end of the season would be something that I would definitely be concerned with.
Yeah.
And definitely one of the things that I wouldn't want to have to deal with is to be on the injury roster. And that's the only thing about being too wide like this and not being able to stretch out or cars being able to get runs, because I don't think that the danger part is the cars being able to get runs. I think you've got drivers that maybe in the back of their mind, well, I'm going to block this run, and the blocks to me become more dangerous than the runs do.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely a fact there. So Ryan Blaney, who made an expert move on the back straightaway to kind of pop out of line, get in front, and then hold William Byron at bay, he wins the race. Byron, who's kind of sort of his brother-in-law, dates Ryan's sister, although nobody's married there, finished second. Denny Hamlin was a lap down up until just a handful of laps to go and finally got the free pass. He sped on pit road, which was Hamlin's calling card for a while. He's been a lot better about it lately, but he ended up finishing third. And I was thinking at one point when less playoff drivers had trouble and Denny Hamlin was a lap at arrears, I'm going, man, this could be a race where he doesn't even crash at Talladega and mortgages a lot of points. But he still scored 34 points on the day and is fairly safely above the cut line. Corey LaJoie, one of his better career finishes, finished fourth. Austin Cindric was in the fifth spot, and then the rest of the top 10, here we go. The Talladega, baby. Justin Haley, Chase Elliott was up there, Ryan Preece, Riley Herbst, who had an incredible day. I mean, Dev, Herbst was up in that lead pack much of the time, and he ended up ninth. And by the way, a push from Corey LaJoie is what sent Herbst around and kind of scattered the whole field there coming to the start-finish line. And then Daniel Suarez was 10th. Need to mention that He's not, he's like a pre-rookie, basically. Chandler Smith driving the third Colin car, number 13, finished in the 11th spot. And then other playoff drivers, need to run them down. Christopher Bell, Kyle Larson, and Tyler Reddick were 14th, 15th, and 16th. Martin Truex Jr. was 18th, yet to finish in the top 15 in the playoffs. And we're now, what, through the playoffs, right? Is my math right? Yeah, halfway through the playoffs. He was 18th. 19th was Chris Buescher. Bubba Wallace just couldn't get anything going there toward the end, and he was 23rd. And Kyle Busch had a little bit of damage from the caution that brought out the end of the first stage, or the caution at the end of the first stage when Stenhouse ran out of fuel and Chastain spun. Busch got some damage in that and never really recovered, was 25th. Brad Keselowski, after pushing Carson Hocevar and Hocevar spinning, finished 32nd. So he suddenly has had this really upstart playoff run, is now on fumes going into a roval race that he is not expected to run in front of the other playoff drivers, at least. And lastly, in 37th, the first car to not finish the race was Ross Chastain. And we need to mention who finished second in this race initially, guys, Kevin Harvick, who came within 12 one-thousandths of a second of winning his first Super Speedway race in 13 years, his first win of the season and since the middle of last season, and in his final season, in his final Super Speedway start. Dan, Harvick gets disqualified. I don't know that I need to ask any questions about that. Stuart Haas has struggled on speed. They've been good at these super speedways, but they've also had some big penalties this year trying to find that speed. But, Dan, what would it have been like for you, the viewer and the fan, to see Kevin Harvick maybe get his last career win, potentially, and then have it DQ'd like 2 hours later?
You know, that would be the agony of victory there.
Huh.
To run that good and then be DQ'd. I've seen it a good many times on short tracks before, but not that many times at all in NASCAR or either in any of the other divisions of NASCAR that are your elite divisions. So, that would have been pure agony, as I'm sure finishing second was, and then being DQ'd because, driver more than likely knew nothing about what was going on with the car.
Yeah.
And don't really know. I'm like a lot of fans. I've read a lot about it, either through YouTube, internet, social media, whatever. And you can find every comment known to man, whether it was right, wrong, indifferent. I keep going through my mind what I thought that they might have done to the car, because I've seen a lot of things done regarding windshield, whether you try to move the A-pillar, which is the post coming up on each side that supports the windshield and the roof. But the only thing that I can factor in my mind is the windshield been able to let some of the pressure from inside of the car. And I'm speaking out of school myself, because not knowing what that pressure is inside, whether it is pressure, whether it is a vacuum, you don't know which way you want the air to go. So with the car sealed off the way that they are, the wind tunnel, or instruments that tell whether you have pressurization or vacuum would be the only way to know this for sure. But I just can't see where what they did would be a major benefit, unless they really have studied this really, really well, and they've definitely got an idea of what the pressures inside or what this would do to benefit the car.
Right. And Rodney Childers tweeted, and I think deleted it later on, but tweeted that they had silicone on the you're nodding your head, Devin, did you read this? But he had silicone on the bolt. Okay. It wasn't, they didn't mean for it to come out. And I mean, that's hard to believe if NASCAR even thought to check that they weren't looking for something. But, they're all trying to find thousands of seconds there. And, maybe having that bolt work itself out to relieve the pressure could have been the reason. But nonetheless, he was disqualified. The other Stewart Haas cars were not, but they also were not finishing in the top five, right? So that's part of it there. Now, Dev, you were watching the race there. So the fans had a pretty raucous reaction, right, to the finish. I mean, were they happy? I mean, Ryan Blaney is not Chase Elliott, but he certainly is popular with the fans. And he seemed pretty upbeat, of course, after winning that race. So what was the crowd reaction like to the 12 car?
I think the crowd reaction was pretty if you're talking directly about Ryan Blaney winning the race, I think people were content with it. But the overall finish, I think, is what got people electrified at the race because of how close that race finishes. I'm sure the Blaney fans, Blaney, one of the more popular drivers out there when you're in the grandstand, just see Blaney gear. I'd say Chase Elliott, Kevin Harvick, maybe Ryan Blaney is the third most popular driver. And I think a lot of fans were content with Blaney winning, especially now that he digs himself out of a little bit of a hole in the playoff standings and gets himself into the round of eight next week. So I think a lot of the fans were content about it.
Yeah, well, look, and let's talk about that. With a driver that was expected to be below the cut line potentially now going above it, it moves the cut line down. So Brad Keselowski, looking at the playoff standings, is 2 points to the good only over Tyler Reddick, who won Circuit of the Americas earlier this year and is expected to be really hooked up at a road course. Bubba Wallace is 9 points below. Ross Chastain, after that crash, is 10 points below. I was thinking he was going to kind of get it together and get going. And of course, he probably would have done well, but he decided to go up high and avoid that wreck when Kyle Busch got into Stenhouse there, and that was the Waterloo for Chastain. And then Kyle Busch, who just had a bad race after a really tough race the week before in Texas, he's 12th and minus 26, basically in must-win territory. Now, ahead of Keselowski, things are a lot more comfortable, although not a gimme for these drivers. Remember, there will be stage break cautions this week at the Roval. They brought those back for road courses, so drivers are going to have to choose points or track position in the third stage or the second stage, right? So Kyle Larson is plus 15. Six in points is Truex, plus 17. Think about it. Truex has 36 playoff points and is only 17 points to the good on the cut line. The regular season matters, everybody. The regular season matters. Chris Buescher is 19 to the good, and 22 to the good is Christopher Bell, the winner at the Roval a year ago. And Denny Hamlin's plus 50. The two drivers that have for sure clinched their way in 100% are the two winners the last 2 weeks, William Byron and Ryan Blaney. So that's how it looks going into the Roval. I think anything can happen there. The cars are all very close to the same. It's really going to be a matter of track position and then, I guess, survive in turn one. Dev, I think you're going to be there, right? So what are some of the things you're looking for and maybe going to ask the drivers and follow in the garage?
Well, I think there's going to be a continuation of asking them about strategy and how that could have been affected if there were no stage breaks. And one thing, too, I think before that they announced recently is that they're moving the restart zone to where it originally was going to be, which was right in that final turn area. And they were originally going to have that, but then...
So before the chicane, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Be the inaugural Roval weekend, like I think the week going into it, they moved the restart zone to just the regular tri-oval part. But I think that's going to be interesting. And I was listening to an interview Elton Sawyer was given on Sirius XM NASCAR Radio this
morning. NASCAR competition director. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And basically one of the reasons why they came down to that decision was because they looked at what Chicago was. And I think they moved the restart zone back in Chicago and had single file restarts. And with Chicago's turn one being kind of similar to the Roval's turn one, where you're just, it's a 90 degree turn, or just, I think they're wanting to minimize speed risk going into that. Putting it on the final turns of the Roval, I think, definitely minimizes that, because now cars will be a little bit more separated and it will be a slower speed going into turn one.
Yeah, I think that's the idea, is that they'll be more sorted out going into turn one, right? Instead of, you know, just coming up to speed, basically. The other drivers entered in this race for Sunday, the Bank of America Roval 400, which I wish I was going to be a part of. My brother, I'm so happy for him. He's getting married this weekend. I'll be in Hilton Head Island, as I've talked about the last couple of weeks on the show. Andy Lally, who lives here in Georgia from New York, he's going to be in car 15 for Rick Ware. Zane Smith is going to supplant Todd Gilliland in car 38. I'm kind of surprised they're still doing that, with Zane going to Chevrolet and Todd Gilliland returning to the 38. But that was a sponsored thing, pre-decided. So, okay, 42 car will not be Carson Hocevar this week for Legacy Motor Club. It'll be Mike Rockefeller, who's driven that before, the German driver has. And Todd Gilliland will be in the 51, and Josh Balicki will be in car number 78. And Balicki from Wisconsin, his forte, although he's run a lot of other stuff, is the road course racing there. So that's going to be fun to watch at the Roval. No trucks this weekend, but we do need to look on the Xfinity side. I want to pull up their there we go. I want to pull up their entry list. They've got 42 cars for the Drive for the Cure 250 on Saturday. All right, 42 cars entered for only 38 spots. Kyle Weatherman is going to be in the 4 car. Josh Balicki in the 07. Stephen Parsons in the 08. Here we go. Jordan Taylor Jorts, he's going to be in the 11 car for Colic. That will be one to watch. And how about this, Dano? Boris Said will drive for Hendrick Motorsports in the 17 car. Come on, man. That's going to be fun. He's about 60 years old out there running hard. The 19 car will be Myatt Snyder making one of his few starts for the Gibbs team. Connor Mozak of the 24, Kyle Sieg in the 28. That's expected. Alex Gannett, former Gresham Motorsports driver out of Canada. He's in the 35 for Emerlyn Gase Racing. The 53, his teammate's going to be Connor Daly. Raja Karus going to be in the 44. Leland Honeyman in the 45. Y'all got all this? Taking notes? The 50 car that only runs the road courses will be Preston Partis, that Precision Performance team. The 66, the MBM Motorsports team is Sage Karam. And then Devin Jones in the 74. Alex LeBay will be in the 87. I don't even know whose car that is, the 87. And actually, he's listed twice, so that's interesting. He'll be in the 91, too, for some reason. But anyway, there are all sorts of drivers from all over there. And, Dan, I know a lot of them don't have a chance of winning, if any, right? I mean, maybe a couple. I think Jordan Taylor and potentially Boris Said. I don't know if Said's going to win, but he could have a good run and good equipment. But, Dan, it's exciting to see other drivers. I know these road courses have been a little bit vanilla this year, but Dan, it's exciting to see names that you're not used to seeing. And while we're not getting V8 supercar and F1 drivers, that Xfinity race is going to have all sorts of color and going to send some cars home.
Yep, I agree with that. I think it's nice to see more than a full field. It also aids in bringing those speeds up, I think, whenever you have more than a field of cars entered, because it brings a level of competition to the back as well as to the front. You want to be on the front row, obviously, but also too, you don't want to be any further back than those last two cars on the last row either. So it will increase the speeds to me throughout the field, everybody trying to get in and only a limited number of spots. So yeah, seeing Boris Said, be good to see how well he does, because I think this also will give an idea to a lot of other drivers who think they might be too up in years too much to be able to compete. If Boris has a good run, I think this will bring a lot more interest to the drivers who maybe have sat back and thought, well, maybe, you know, maybe I'm too old for this, because up to now it's been the youth, and the youth have driven the sport on the ovals, short tracks, maybe not so much, but the youth have carried the day throughout most of the year. But it's nice to see some of the older drivers doing really well as well.
Oh, it certainly is. And I mean, Boris Said, I think it's for a couple of years, said, oh yeah, this is going to be my last one. So I don't know what the case is with that. Andy Lally has said he'll be entered in the Xfinity race too, in that car 87 I'd mentioned. Alex LeBay will be in the 91, and that's a Peterson Motorsports, I think is what it's called. Peterson Motorsports, not a team I'm familiar with. A couple of these drivers said, oh yeah, that's my last hurrah, you know, and Boris Said goes out there and runs top 10 in a Hendrick car. I think he might reconsider that. This is a cutoff race for them too. The Xfinity series will go from the round of 12 to the round of 8 after this. We have seen in both Xfinity and Cup, Devin, these races be extraordinarily dramatic, regardless of shenanigans, if you will, regardless of rain and stuff. We have seen Kyle Larson go into a must-win situation and win in 2021 at the Roval. He was having this magical year and almost didn't make the round of 8. The very next year, 2022, Kyle Larson gets a little greedy, clips the wall, and that was the end of his playoffs just 1 year later. Kyle Larson, too, also made it by just 1 point in 2018. When he actually wrecked Jeffrey Earnhardt on the last lap of the first Roval race to get that one spot there, just ran him over to take that spot. So we've seen Alex Bowman do it a couple of times. Chase Briscoe last year barely raced into the round of 8, and then of course Christopher Bell had that game 7 moment, did it twice at the end of the round of 8. Or the end of round of 12 and the end of round of 8 at Roval and Martinsville. But that's going to be a lot of fun to watch. The Xfinity playoff standings here, these are fun too, by the way. As John Hunter Nemechek and Justin Allgaier, winners of the last two races, they're locked into the next round. And Cole Custer at plus 63, I think, basically is also. You have Austin Hill and Chandler Smith at 44 and 32 points above the cut line. The Georgia drivers, 6 in points is Sammy Smith. Outgoing Sammy Smith will be at Junior Motorsports next year. He's plus 18. Sheldon Creed, for all all the turmoil he's had this season, is still plus nine to the cut line and a good road racer. And Daniel Hemric is plus one of the cut line, with Parker Kligerman at minus one. And at that race at Texas a week ago, or 2 weeks ago, Kligerman could have been on the other side of that, and he and Hemric both had bad races. And then Jeb Burton, Josh Berry, and Sam Mayer are way back and almost in must-win, if not completely in must-win territory there for the Xfinity Series. Dev, we've seen Cole Custer peel off a couple of road course wins this year, and actually the same with Sam Mayer. You think it's one of those guys that they're going to have to drive through to get to victory lane? Do you think Sam Mayer could win his way into the next round, even though he's seated last right now in the playoffs?
Yeah, it's possible, and we've seen it before that really anything could happen at the Roval, and the Roval one being one of those races that where the road course aces turn, well, sometimes they tend to shine, especially in the Xfinity Series, where AJ Allmendinger has pretty much won, seems like, every Xfinity Roval race, I think. But is he racing in the field on Saturday?
No, not listed. Hemric's in the 10, and Jordan Taylor's in the 11, so... Yeah, that's kind of interesting. They flew A.J. Allmendinger all the way out to Portland to go trophy hunting, but they didn't put him in the Xfinity Roval race. I guess, well, you know, he's a cup driver. He can't do it. He's a full-time cup driver, and it's the playoffs. So that's why you don't have him doing that. That's I'm glad I answered that one. Okay, look, hey, you mentioned, did he win all of them? So A.J. Allmendinger has won all but one Xfinity Road Course Series Roval race. He's won 19 through 22, so four in a row. Chase Briscoe actually got his first career Xfinity win in the 2018 Roval race. So that was Briscoe's hurrah there. The Cup Series winners previously at the Roval, let's see if we can remember. Ryan Blaney won the first one. Who won the next two, Dev?
Chase Elliott won 2019-2020.
Yep. And then we mentioned already Kyle Larson and Christopher Bell won the last 2 years. And, you know, both of those guys went on to, you know, do bigger things for sure. And by the way, we need to mention, I heard this too on the Teardown podcast, the champion. So we're talking about the Roval at Vegas. The winner of the last two Vegas races in the playoffs went on to be the Cup Series champion, because they kind of got to take the rest of the round of eight off to work on their Phoenix car, and then went to Phoenix and kicked butt. And so getting into that next round there, you got to think they already have their eyes on that mile and a half, which will be PRN's last race of the year, too. All right, so we're talking about the Roval here. I guess, Dev, you got to talk. I say I guess. You definitely 100% got to talk to Christopher Bell, who won this race a year ago, and you intro it here. So let's go ahead and hear from Christopher Bell, who talks about the Roval. Dev, you talked to him where?
I talked to him at the Bristol Motor Speedway Media Center right at the round of 16 cutoff race, and I got to ask him about the Roval upcoming, since he is the defending winner of the Bank of America Roval 400, and here is what he had to say.
What are your thoughts on NASCAR putting back the stage breaks into the road courses?
It just really changes the strategy, because at any racetrack that you go to where you can pit and not lose a lap, you have to jump the stages if you're trying to keep your track positions. So, it really makes it two different races whenever you have yellows on the road courses, because you're going to have guys that are racing for the win and trying to maintain their track position, and then guys who are not racing for the win and who are able to stay out and take the stage points. So, the road courses with the yellow flags at the stages, it really spells out the strategy and, creates two different races inside the race.
What do you think a Roval race would look like without stage yellows? Because we've never run a race there without stage cautions.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would look very, very similar to all the other road courses that we've done this year, and probably long green flag runs. You know, the Watkins Glen, we had one yellow, I think, and then Indy, we had one yellow too. So I would have expected it to be green for the most part if we don't have those stage breaks.
Thank you, Christopher. And that was what he had to say basically on the Roval. And I think the interesting thing is strategy and green flag runs, which we saw a lot of that last year, and probably would have saw a lot of it this year if NASCAR hadn't removed the stage yellows, but still expect a lot of green flag action at the Roval. And I think it's interesting to see, and a lot of other drivers did as well at Bristol when they were asked about the stage cautions being put back on for the Roval. And I remember one driver, McDowell, now he didn't get to advance to the round of 12, but saying that, how that affects strategy going into this race. And we see a couple of drivers right now that are under the cut line that are kind of in must-win situations, like Kyle Busch. And what McDowell said is that you have to prepare for this race completely different now that the strategy that you were going to have is completely thrown out the window. And I think one thing, too, with them putting the stage cautions back on, it's kind of harder to dominate that race due to the fact that you're either going to have to go for stage points or you're going to have to pit before the stage ends. And one driver in that situation that's in a must-win situation, Kyle Busch. See what he does there this weekend.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, Kyle Busch was really introspective, by the way, in his comments at Talladega, talking about overdriving the car and not – he used to be able to make up for what his car lacked with his seat of the pants and driving. And he just can't do that anymore. It's not like the car doesn't allow you to step over the edge like you used to and then gather it back up. It's either 1 second you're hooked up and the next second you're turned around. And I do think that that still plays into this race because we've seen Kyle Busch have multiple problems at the Roval before in these high-pressure situations. Not to say he's not a good driver. He's one of the best of all time. But him being in a must-win scenario, you know they're going to have to go grab a bunch of stage points. If they maxed out stage points, you know, they're minus 26. Well, there's 20 points right there, right? Now, I mean, granted, who knows how the people he's chasing finish. But he's going to have to beat a lot of people. That's the thing that's tough, Dan. When you're minus 26 in the cut line, it's like, okay, I mean, you know, things have to happen your way. But you also have to beat three other people and hope that they don't win and move the cut line a different spot. So I think, Dan, that even Kyle Busch, who's been in these playoffs, you know, 17, 18 times now, has got to be feeling the pressure because he's won three races and had a successful year. And now here it comes down to this.
Yeah, you know he's feeling the pressure. And the fact is that each year it seems like that the square, the circle, whatever box you're involved in here that that makes these cars more equal, it becomes harder and harder to be able to drive your way in because you have to, for the most part, Doug, Devin, you well know that you have to have a flawless day.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's what it's 100% what it's going to take. Before the Gen 7 car, you know, Devin mentioned it, we've seen a lot of people get out front and dominate depending on the strategy. That was before the Gen 7 car. The Roval has provided a lot of exciting Game 7, memorable moments, but a lot of that has been adjacent to a lot of it has. Not all of it, but a lot of it has. And if this thing gets green happy, really it's who has the track position and scoots away. These cars are all so similar. These drivers are looking at tablets and the SMT data and are so tuned up. They're within fine variances of each other, even on a road course where there's so many places you can make up and lose speed. It's going to be hard if a driver gets behind the eight ball in this race. It's going to be exciting to listen to, so dial in on the Performance Racing Network, whether you do it on the PRN app, your local affiliate, or SiriusXM. And, of course, the rest of the series races will for the Cup Series playoffs will be on NBC, on big NBC, all right? So, long as it doesn't go late to get into Sunday football and then or Sunday night football, then that'll be a problem there. By the way, we're not expecting Taylor Swift at the Charlotte Roval this weekend. Just saying. No need to make a story there. You know, maybe we get Demi Lovato or something. We don't get Taylor Swift.
Yeah,
this
I wonder
weekend.
How much of a boost that Taylor Swift would bring to the NASCAR ratings if she was at a race.
Yeah, what about if Chase Elliott was in the playoffs? How about that? Oh, okay. So, by the way, Chase Elliott's still in the Owners' Championship and has one of the best average finishes and running position and overall points situation since the playoffs began. You got to wonder, he'd probably be quietly lurking here to get into the round of eight, if not for missing the playoffs. You know, that's just what a costly move, as Devin has said multiple times on this podcast, when he decided to lash out against Denny Hamlin, zero out his points that day in the Coke 600, then miss the next race, suspension. That's the difference right there, not just the six races he missed before. All right, so speaking of that, we're going to go outside of the X's and O's a little bit. Something hit me different Saturday. All right, we had a Truck Series race, which was very trucky. All right, it was very trucky. It was ugly. There were wrecks all over the place. But in the end, it was Front Row Motorsports teammate Brett Moffitt, who won in truck number 34 at Talladega over Ben Rhodes on Saturday afternoon. In fact, his teammate, this is crazy if y'all saw the replay or not, Zane Smith spun out, like locked up his brakes and spun in pit road and knocked out his tire changer. His tire changer got hit hard and just stood right back up and kept working, which was amazing. But Zane Smith had damage and ended up finishing 32nd, and the defending champion is on the wrong side of the playoffs right now. In fact, looking at it, he's the last person with one race to go, Homestead, 36 points below the cut line. That's huge. I never would have thought that after what he did early in the season that Zane Smith had fallen off. But it was Brett Moffitt, who's not a regular Truck Series competitor, who won that race. Ben Rhodes was second. Dean Thompson, who we bashed real hard on the show last week for his 10 DNFs, he got his best career finish in third. And Corey Heim out of Georgia, he won, Texas? Anyway, he won recently. It was Texas.
He won at Bristol.
At Bristol. Bristol, that's right. They were not racing in Texas. At Bristol, of course, yeah. And so he's locked into the next round. And really, it's pretty tight. Carson Hocevar, plus 23. Christian Eckes only plus 9 on the cut line. And Nick Sanchez is only plus 3 over Grant Enfinger, who is on the other side of the cut line. So I want to get to that. There was two drivers going for the same real estate situation in the closing laps in the Truck Series race, Matt Crafton and Nick Sanchez. It caused a big wreck. Sanchez, I think, ended up, he got cleaned out in that wreck, and so did Crafton, and so did some others. Now, there are disputing stories about what happened after the race, but here is what's undeniable. Nick Sanchez got what he thought was his nose broken and his eyebrows split open and blood all over his face. What was also undeniable is a video of him screaming that he's going to effing kill the person that punched him, which was Matt Crafton. That's undeniable. Those things happened. Now, Sanchez's story is that he was just in the garage like 20, 30 minutes after the race is over. He gets tapped on the shoulder and sucker punched by Crafton. Crafton's 47. Sanchez is like 22, 23. Crafton's story was that Sanchez had already had that inflammatory, threatening language toward him when he decided to lash out. That's what I understand anyway, the two sides. The point is, we saw something ugly, and my first thought is what makes me disappointed in myself, which was NASCAR shouldn't fine them. They should pay them under the table, because here we are talking about a fight, and those are entertaining. But then I thought about it some more, and I really was disturbed seeing a guy with his face covered in blood screaming, "I'm going to effing kill you at Homestead." I'm going to go to Dan first, because he's the mature adult out of us three on this podcast, and more mature than me. I won't speak for Devin. Dan, I don't know how much attention you paid to that incident in particular, but at least my description of it, and I really tried hard to do it justice. I tried not to sensationalize it. The things that I said happened actually happened. What did you think about this in comparison to some of the other melees we've talked about, or some of the stuff you've even seen yourself firsthand?
You know, I know that the passions run high during the moment. They do, and this goes a little above and beyond, a little bit frightening. And in the world that we live in today, you and I both know, Doug, that you have to be careful what you say, what you do. And this one kind of does bother you a little bit, just goes borderline. And I just hope that there wasn't any intent in that on carrying that through, which I don't believe there was at all. But still, like I say, you have to be oh so careful.
Devin, don't you think there's a difference? I agree with you, Dan, and thank you for saying that. Devin, don't you think there's a difference between "I'm going to get you" or "I'm going to kick your butt" and "I'm going to effing kill you"? Like, I know that it's all in the moment, but this was also, you know, if it Crafton's story's right, it was said before Sanchez got punched. But I mean, we would all probably we got punched and carved up that hard. Am I wrong here that this sits different? And do you think that we haven't heard the last of this as far as punishment and so forth?
Yeah, I would say the one thing that's kind of odd with this fight is that really the story that there was a sneak attack on Nick Sanchez there.
That was Nick Sanchez's story, yes, is that he got tapped on the shoulder and sucker punched. Crafton said they had words and it was pretty inflammatory, and that's what prompted the attack.
I didn't get to catch the race, but I think they might have had a conversation post race on pit road, and then the fight happened in a garage, which you don't really see too often anymore. If something's gonna happen, it's gonna happen on pit road.
They were in street clothes already, or at least I think Crafton was, from what I heard. Like, it that's the thing is like
yeah, that's the odd thing though, this whole situation, because most of the 95% of the time it'll happen on pit road or somewhere near pit road, not in the garage area. And if it does happen in the garage area, normally it's carrying over from pit road or something. But yeah, I don't think it's acceptable behavior to just go up and sneak attack somebody. And a lot of that was in the moment, but I don't think the actions were necessary at all. And NASCAR did release, I'm surprised NASCAR didn't announce a suspension. Sanchez got fined. But
it's early in the day Tuesday as we record. Did they already announce just fines?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's just fines for both of them. Although there was a crew member, I think it was on Sanchez. I think it was Nick Sanchez's dad that got suspended because he might have thrown a punch somewhere.
Oh.
And they,
okay.
NASCAR suspended him.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Let's see here. I got it right here. Sorry. So Nick Sanchez. Okay, so Renee Sanchez has been suspended from NASCAR through the remaining 2023 race scheduled through Phoenix for the member code of conduct. Nick Sanchez fined $5,000. Matt Crafton fined $25,000 for behavioral. And then there's a safety violation for driver protective equipment for Chandler Smith during qualifying for his cup car, by the way. He had the wrong clothing. So that was the penalty report. So I didn't realize that. So, yeah, Renee Sanchez, I didn't even know that Nick Sanchez's dad was involved. It was just a bad look. So I'm not saying this with glee, and I hope I'm not right. Nick Sanchez has been on the cusp of being considered a top or a hot prospect, let's say. He, like Carson Hocevar, it took him a while to win, but man, he was coming close. And Nick Sanchez has come close a few times. But now I see him, and again, I know he just got leveled in the face, and I get being upset. But you're out in public, and you're screaming, "I'm going to effing kill you at Homestead?" I think that right there, Dan, Dan, tell me if I'm overreacting. Again, you're the mature adult in the conversation. That right there sets Nick Sanchez back. I know Matt Crafton's the one that beat him up. I know Matt Crafton's the one that got the big fine. But for some reason, those words to me, and it may have been said by other people too, but the one I saw, the video I saw was Nick Sanchez screaming it. Dan, those words to me set him back somehow. I'm not judging him, but I think that could set back his trajectory, you know, a certain amount.
Well, we definitely got to know that it didn't help, and there is the problem, is it didn't help. So, you know, what can you say? It's already been done. It's already out there, and you're just going to deal with it.
Yeah, that's true, and it's done. It's over, and a lot of these things are done and over. One video, by the way, frontstretch.com, I got to hand it to their guys on the ground. I'm not even sure which of their reporters taped what or videoed what, but they got the fight really well. Bob Pockris is in the middle of it, got the fight too. And then they also, you know, got Corey Roper, I think, was involved or trying to pull drivers, or Cody Roper, I mean, trying to pull, you know, trying to help break it up. And Cody Roper said one thing Corey Roper said one thing pretty interesting. He said, "Oh, I don't know. You know, I think these guys, they'll be fine at Homestead. They'll be buddies and just talk about it later." And I was thinking, yeah, okay, maybe. I mean, I don't know. But a lot of these things, even if the drivers don't like each other, usually the aggression is over with. And I would say if I'm Nick Sanchez right now, you're 3 points to the good. Even if you weren't, you don't need to go take out anything. What happened between you guys of fisticuffs happened to the garage. All right. I also texted something to you guys when I think it was Devin that first shared with us what was going on, right? Because I was completely out of pocket at that moment. And what did I say back to you guys? I said, all I knew was Nick Sanchez's face was bloody and he was screaming, "I'm going to effing kill you." And I guess little guy, I said, "Oh, I don't think Nick Sanchez could take on a wet paper bag, okay? I'm sorry. Like, let's just – he's not fighting Matt Crafton or anybody, so I don't know what he's talking about killing anything. But let's just hope that he learns from his sins there. Matt Crafton, too, that's a terrible look for a father and a guy that's been in the garage for so long. And I don't know. As much as we like the fighting – and, again, I wanted to come on here and laugh about it. I had a different tone after watching it more and more, so – that's that. Devin, before we get off from that subject there and do our final thoughts, Devin, was anybody in your circle talking about that, or were you with fans, or were they all focused on Sunday?
It was just Sunday. I didn't really hear anything about the about the fight or anything. It was just, it happened on Saturday, and you just didn't really hear much more about it until really this morning.
Yeah, true. Oh, since I brought it up, you mean?
Well, I was listening to SiriusXM NASCAR radio this morning on my way here, and that was one of the topics Elton Sawyer brought.
Gotcha. Yeah, well, I think I'm really surprised there wasn't a suspension there. I think considering what they...
I was surprised, too.
Just considering how injured... Like, they had to glue Sanchez's eyebrow back together. All right? You know, he had to glue his eyebrow back together. I mean, I don't care what he did. Like, that's tough, man. That is a tough one. And, of course, $25,000 fine for Matt Kraft is a whole lot different than one for Kyle Busch. I'm sorry, but that's a big fine. I don't care if ThorSport pays it or Crafton pays it. I know they have money and whatever, but they don't make kajillions of dollars in that series. That's a big fine. And for Sanchez, I think $5,000 is even a pretty big one. So we'll move on from that there.
I couldn't pay Matt Crafton's fine. I could not pay that.
That's correct, yeah. And you know what? You only have three less championships than he does. So, like, that may, yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, you're right in the same league. Okay. So, but their next race is Homestead. Like I mentioned before, Xfinity and Cup Series, they will be tackling the Roval this weekend. That's going to be a lot of fun to listen to and watch. So, be sure and take note of that. Now, I wanted to talk about, until we realized we were doing our prep work today, that the schedule in full is supposed to be announced this week. So, instead of us talking about a couple of the rumors, right? You know, the Brickyard change, and then Iowa Speedway is expected to have the race that belonged to Fontana. We're going to table that and wait till the full schedule comes out and sort of break it down for you. We did that with the IndyCar schedule a week ago, so be sure to go back and listen to episode 236. Pretty interesting development of the F1 world, although there's still two more hurdles to pass, so to speak. But Andretti Autosport, or their global operation, has been approved by one governing body anyway to begin for a Formula One season in 2026. Now, it still has to be approved by the drivers and owners and a couple of other things, but that a big hurdle for them. So the American Andretti Autosport and Cadillac partnership could be seen in Formula One here in a couple of years. Devin, I saw you swallow a frog when I say that.
You stole my final thought.
Oh, shoot. Well, go for it. No, take it. So what else do you have to say about that?
Okay, my final thought on this is basically – I think this is more of an off-season discussion we're going to have, but look at the connection with Andretti Autosport, Gamebridge, mm-hmm. Look at the moves that Spire's making all of a sudden and all that. I'm just going to leave it out there. I think we'll discuss it at a later time, but look at the moves they're making in F1 as well.
Yeah, for sure. So Gamebridge, and I didn't know this till this weekend, but Gamebridge's CEO is a higher-up or a co-owner of Andretti Autosport. So Gamebridge Insurance, which is a big sponsor now with Spire, who's just bought a $40 million charter in the Cup Series to have a third team that Zane Smith's going to drive, and also last week bought Kyle Busch Motorsports. Hello. Busch is still going to run five races next year, by the way. It's just going to be under that auspice, if you will. Those are big moves, and Gamebridge is connected. And by the way, Gamebridge, proud sponsor, Nick Sanchez. Hey, there you go. You're connected the dots, Devin. Good job with that. Dano, any final thoughts for you?
No, it really is coming down to end of the wire here for four drivers coming into the Roval. And it is, you know, the thoughts are it is going to have to be a flawless day, and not only driver, but pit crew. Everything has to perform, and then the car has to be deemed legal whenever the event is over. So I think the pressure now is to the point that the kettle is going to boil over.
For sure. The pressure's I don't know who is going to end up on top here. I mean, I didn't see Ryan. I mean, Ryan Blaney, of course, won, what, three races now at Talladega? Is it three? I mean, you know, like.
I think so.
I mean.
All very close finishes.
Yeah. All very close finishes. And he's won a Daytona race, too, in the summer. It was old Atlanta. You know, like. But I didn't see him winning this race. It just seemed like his time had passed. Like, I'm not surprised Chase Elliott didn't win it either. It just hasn't been his year. And then he does it. Okay, well, that resets everything, and now Brad Keselowski's on fumes. So yeah, and Ross Chastain, who had kind of come back to life in the playoffs, is on fumes too. Yeah, that the pressure is definitely tacked up, if you will, or turned up for sure. So yeah, that's gonna be fun to watch here how these playoffs unfold too. And I want to say, final thought: about Kyle Busch Motorsports being sold. That news, we talked about it sort of theoretically. Devin brought it to my attention during last week's recording. Dan, I wish you could have been a part of that, episode 236, but here you are today. And I want to say this. That's an organization that's won, what, 100 races, right? Is it 100? I think it is. They've won championships. Kyle Busch has been, that is as dominant an organization as we've seen in any series, right, for their short time. They've only been around since 2010. Out of all of the accolades, after grooming Bubba Wallace, Christopher Bell, and Eric Jones, and Noah Gregson, and Harrison Burton, and Todd Gilliland, all right, and whoever else I'm forgetting, not Justin Boston. We don't think about him. Okay, but Kyle Busch himself and all the trophies he's won, the report was that Kyle Busch Motorsports sold for only one or maybe two. Maybe $2 million. I thought it was just one, but it was only one or $2 million for all that. So Spire bought the shop. Spire bought Rowdy Manufacturing, their chassis company, and they only paid like a couple mil at the most. The charter system works, guys. Like it or not, it puts value in these teams. BJ McLeod Motorsports sold for, or sorry, Live Fast Racing sold for $40 million. Kyle Busch Motorsports for like one or $2 million. That's the difference in the charter system right there. All right, folks, like our Five to Go Racing Facebook page. Devin put some videos up and some pictures up this weekend for the stands. Those are really nice. I always have trouble seeing those, Dev, because when I go click to it, it switches my account to Five to Go. All right, so I can't, like, go and share them as Doug, right? It's kind of weird. So, yeah, but anyway, just go to the Five to Go page. We put up the new episodes there. Dev, you're going to be at the Roval which days?
I will be there. I'll be leaving Friday morning to head up there. I'll probably be at the track. I won't be at the track very long on Friday, but I'll be there Saturday, Sunday, all day.
So go see Dev there. Say hi to him if you're going to find him. Now, Dev, did you say you had a twin bed that one of the race fans could crash on just like at Bristol?
I don't think so this time.
This time. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Hey, also, too, the fan zone, they're going to have some big stuff, some big concerts out there. I don't have all the details on that. And look, I don't have a problem you guys listening to other podcasts. There are ones that are way more with people that are way more connected. The Door Bumper Clear podcast, TJ Majors, Brett Griffin, Freddie Kraft, those spotters, and Casey Haim, the host, they're all going to be, or Casey Boat, I should say, they're all going to be doing a post-Xfinity race live show in the fan zone. I want y'all to truck up to Charlotte Motor Speedway. I would be there if I could. It's going to be a big-time weekend there. So, guys, thank y'all for joining today. Dan, get that ragweed out of your nose. Dev, get back to class. And for Devin and Dan, I'm Doug. Thank you all so much for listening to the Five to Go Racing Podcast.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.